Proverbs chapter 9 this morning. Proverbs 9 is one of those really important passages because it ends the introduction, which is longer than most, and it begins to open the door to the rest of the book. So that's where we stand, the book of Proverbs. We're actually going to close out the book of Proverbs next week by jumping all the way to chapter 31. And the purpose of that was never to go through the entire book of Proverbs. It was to give you the framework in which Proverbs finds itself so that you can go through Proverbs on your own. Chapters 10 through the end, basically, are individual snippets that are framed by our understanding of what wisdom is. Proverbs chapter 9, we'll read through the entire passage, entire chapter, and we'll jump into things this morning. Proverbs 9, verse 1, the Bible says, "Wisdom has built her house, she's hewn her seven pillars, she's slaughtered her beasts, she's mixed her wine, she's also set her table. She's sent out her young women to call from the highest places in the town, 'Whoever is simple, let him turn in here.' To him who lacks sense, she says, 'Come, eat of my bread and drink of the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and live and walk in the way of insight. Whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse, and he who reproves a wicked man incurs injury. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase in learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. For by me your days will be multiplied, and years will be added to your life. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself. If you scoff, you alone will bear it." Verse 13. "The woman folly is loud. She's seductive and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house. She takes a seat on the highest places of the town, calling to those who pass by, who are going straight on their way, 'Whoever is simple, let him turn in here.' To him who lacks sense, she says, 'Stolen water is sweet. Bread eaten in secret is pleasant.' But he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol." As we've gone through the book of Proverbs this summer, we found that the book itself is far from analytical. When you think of wisdom, you think of theories, you think of facts that are kind of disconnected and disjointed, and at times and in places, the book of Proverbs kind of feels like that. Even though there's very much a boots on the ground, rubber meets the road kind of mentality to much of the instruction given in Proverbs, some of it is disconnected at times, it seems, from life. But the whole of Proverbs isn't. In fact, it's intensely practical. It's so very concrete. It gives pictures that helps to develop. It helps to stir the emotions. It gives the imagination a vision of what the good life is and calls the heart to yearn for wisdom while teaching the heart to hate folly. It does this by reminding us that there's only one world in which we live, and this world in which we live is broken. And in this broken world, we need wisdom to skillfully navigate the crooked paths of life. And so as we look at this life and the brokenness of this life, we're reminded from the very beginning, chapter 1, we saw this earlier, that life is able to take us far easier than we think to places that we never thought we'd find ourselves. It does this in two ways. There's two dangers that life intrinsically holds for us. The first is the danger of being destroyed by conformity. And so in chapter 1, it introduces us to the men of perverted speech and the adulteress with a smooth mouth or smooth words. We're destroyed by conformity by accepting the invitations of sinners. And the father says to the son, "My son, if sinners entice you, consent not. Don't give in. Don't listen. Don't go with them. Don't walk their paths, because their paths lead to a destination that you cannot afford." In that same chapter, as he opens up everything in chapter 1, not only is there the danger of being destroyed by conformity, there's the danger of being destroyed by complacency. There's a whirlwind coming. There's a storm that's raging. The only way that you can avoid it is to listen to wisdom, to hearken to the voice of God. The Father, in the opening chapters of the book of Proverbs, is speaking with the mouth of wisdom, is speaking with the spirit of wisdom, and both the Father and wisdom are speaking by the Spirit of God to instill the wisdom of God in His creation. And so they're pointing the young man to God and to His Word as he speaks. And so this is not only the danger of listening and accepting the invitation of sinners, but the danger of rejecting the invitation to wisdom. And so this whole book is basically boiled down to two invitations, one by sinners enticing and one by the faithful calling to live life in light of God, calling to live life in light of self. And when you stop and think of it, those are the only two options that exist. These dangers come to their poignant climax in chapter 9, and we see that there's not a lot of different options as far as all these roads are concerned. There's really only one. It boils down to an option between two choices, Lady Wisdom, Lady Folly. And so as it brings us into this focus, what we're going to see in this chapter in particular, that this is a study in contrasts. There's one path that you must choose. There's only two options, wisdom or folly. And which choice you make determines which place you'll end up. As we look at this world in which we live, this broken world in which we live, what we find is that in this broken world, Lady Wisdom speaks. Let's go ahead and look at verse 1. Wisdom has built her house. She's hewn her seven pillars. She's slaughtered her beast and mixed her wine and set her table and sent out her young women to call from the highest places in the town. As we're introduced to Lady Wisdom, we're introduced to her house, a house with pillars. And it's beyond just the face, the idea of the seven pillars giving this house depth, a courtyard that seems to be springing with life. Lady Wisdom is introduced in very positive light as these verses begin to unfold. She has built. She's industrious. She labors. She's strong. She herself is involved in the building process. She has joyful ownership of her house. It's a house that she's designed. Her hands have built. She's exercised her strength in a decorative manner. She herself has hewn her pillars. She's carved them. She's shaped them. She's wrestled them into place. She's hoisted them. She's mounted and set things upon them in order to be able to build the structure of this house. She's made lavish provision. It says she has slaughtered her beasts. Literally, it says she's slaughtered the slaughtering. The idea is there's been a calf that she set aside, and she's fed it everything it can eat. She's fatted this calf for a day such as this. She's killed the fatted calf. Part of everything that she owns is this one thing that she's making provision for a feast, for a meal. And she's killed the whole thing. You can't kill part of it. She kills the whole thing. And she brings it to meet at the table. We see that she's a woman of refined pleasure, that she has mixed her wine. When we think of wine, often in our context, removed from the Middle East, removed from the ancient Near East, we think of it only in a negative context, but wine was something that they would use at celebrations. When it talks about her mixing her wine, it's not diluting it, as the Greeks did. It's the idea of adding either spices or honey. This would be the special cocktail that would be served at a banquet.
And it would only be served at certain occasions. Maybe that special drink that grandma would bring out at Christmas time. You only get it once or maybe twice a year. She's mixed her special drink for this special occasion. She's a woman who makes elegant preparation. She sets her table. She's found the napkins. She's laid out the tablecloth. She's gone to every trouble to remember every setting and to get everything looking exactly right. She's found just the right bouquet to set in the middle of the table. She's found just the right candles. Everything is in place for the meal. As she's introduced, she is sending out her young maidens. There's a measure of managerial expertise. She's running a household. She doesn't do it all herself. Though she is vitally important and vitally involved in the process, reaching out her own arm to accomplish what work needs to be done, she also is administrating and sending out others and delegating responsibility. We see that they're young women. She's the head of the house, or in charge of this house. She has the household. The New Testament refers to her as the oikos despotes, the house despot. She's the leader of the house. It all falls to her administration. And as she's administrating it, she's discipling. She's mentoring these young women who she's giving tasks and she's seeing to their needs and making sure they have what they need as she sends them off to do her work. But she's involved in different generations, and we're going to see how that outreach to different generations is going to affect a young man in particular. And then we see that she is characterized by a very generous invitation. She says, young ladies, you go out into the streets, go to the highest places in the streets so everybody can hear, and say, whoever wants to come, come here. Doesn't it make you excited as you start looking at everything that she has? These pillars, this house that has depth and beauty and lavish decor, a meal that's all prepared, you can smell it from the streets. And she's saying, anybody who wants to come, come. This is Lady Wisdom. We've seen her before. Her activities are balanced in that they're both personal and delegated. Delegated. She's the one who builds. She's the one who hews. She's the one who slaughters. She's the one who mixes. She's the one who sets. But she's also the one who sends. She's personally involved, and she delegates. Her activities are extensive. She has a house. But she's also detailed. She sees to the individual pillars of this house. She's setting a meal. She's sending out the invitations. She's setting up the individual stations and places where everyone has to have all the materials necessary to indulge in this feast. Her activities are both in process and completed. Currently, she's calling. She's making her voice known right now. But on the other hand, she's done. She's completed her building. She's completed her preparing. She's ready. We see that her activities are private and public. They're private first. She's done everything necessary when nobody was looking. In the early hours of the morning when everybody else was sleeping. In the late hours of the night when everybody else was doing their own thing. She was busy doing what needed to be done, preparing to bring others into this relationship. But then it's public. She's first labored, now she enjoys her luxury. She's dispatched, and she's giving invitations. She's promised, and as everybody examines this house, as everybody smells this meal, as everybody hears this voice, they know that this is a lady that can deliver on what she promises. This is a woman who not only can, but has in the past made good on this invitation to others. Wisdom is calling to bring men into a relationship with God. And all you have to do is look back at those who've taken her call, who've taken her at her word. And you can see, you know what? She's able to make good. She's got the good. She's got the materials. She's got the skill. She's got the wherewithal to make good on a promise of fulfilling the satisfactions, the desires of a heart. It's the invitation of Psalm 34, verse 8. Oh, taste and see, my God is good. Her concern is for the simple. Verse 4. Her messengers are out, they're calling from the highest places in the town. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. That word simple we've looked at several times. It's the naive. It's the somewhat innocent. It's capable of being led down the wrong path. It's the inexperienced. It's those who lack commitment. The idea is the way is still open for them to make a choice. They haven't locked in one way or another. They're considering their options. They're weighing their options. They're not committed one way or another just yet. She's concerned for that person. There is a choice that they must make. She wants them to make the right choice. She knows that she herself is the choice that they must make. And she's concerned for them because whichever choice they make is going to lead to the destination that they're going to have consequences that will last a lifetime, that will last an eternity. So she's concerned. She's concerned not only for the simple, but she's concerned for the senseless, that is, those who lack fullness. Literally, the word here is lack of heart. It speaks of the inner man, the heart, the mind, the will. Somebody who hasn't made up their mind just yet. Somebody who hasn't committed. And somebody who, if they were to commit, wouldn't have the courage to follow through on it. It'd be the ones who are so easily distracted. The one who would be passionless in their pursuit. The one who've just begun to make the choice and don't know if they really made the right choice or if it was really worthwhile. That person who's indecisive, lacking heart. She's concerned for these people. Her offer, as she's set up her banquet table, is modestly called bread. Come, eat of my bread. But we've already been given just a little bit. She's pulled back the curtain for us. The author has pulled back the curtain for us. We know that she has more than just bread to offer. She's killed the entire beast. In fact, I believe it says there's more than one. She's slaughtered her beasts. She has more than enough food. Modestly, she calls them to her table and calls it simply bread. She's killed the fatted calf, is the idea. Modestly, she says, just come drink of my wine as though it were some ordinary grape juice. That's not it at all. This is the special elixir that we bring out only at celebrations. This is the fine wine. This is the wine of Cana, saving the best till last. As we look at what she's offering to anyone who would be willing to take her up on this offer, we see that what she gives is a banquet. And that banquet is underwritten by herself. She herself has incurred the cost. It's free for anybody who would come and sit down at her table. My goal this morning is to cause you to love. It's what Hebrews chapter 12, verse 24 says. Let us consider one another, how to provoke one another to love and good works. And what the book of Proverbs at this point is doing, it's creating pictures, it's generating pictures for us that are meant to stir up within us a thirst, a hunger, a passion, a longing, a love for what's true, what's good, what's beautiful. That's my goal this morning, because that's the goal of what God is doing for us in this book of Proverbs that points us to none other than Himself. We see that she begins to speak. End of verse 4, to him who lacks sense, she says, come, eat of my bread, drink of the wine that I have mixed. Then she says, leave your simple ways and live. Leave your simple ways. Leave your ways of uncommitment. Commit to walk with me. And if you do, you who lacks a full heart, I promise to give you a heart filled with insight. You who lacks experience, I will fill you up with experience. You who lacks fullness, I will fill you with everything that can be desired. She says, leave simplicity and live a life full of insight. It meets both needs of those whom she calls. The next thing that we're given here is three different parallel negative evaluations and then three parallel positive evaluations. Verse 7, whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse. He who reproves a wicked man incurs injury. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Two times in those three lines, it refers to a scoffer. One time in those lines, it calls that person wicked. The whole point is, if you are a scoffer, you are one who is wicked. And the scoffer is the one who rejects, in fact, mocks the offer that wisdom makes. The second three lines are also parallel. Don't reprove a scoffer, he will hate you. Opposite, reprove a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be the wiser. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase in learning. Twice does it refer to the scoffer, once equating it with a wicked man. Twice does it refer to a wise man, once equating him with a righteous man. But do you see what's at the center of those two parallel evaluations? Look back at verse 8. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will what? He will hate you. His heart will be animated against you. The hair on the back of his neck will prickle because of you. His lips will get tight as he answers you. Other side of the coin, reprove a wise man, and he'll love you. He'll thank you. His heart will be broken. His tears will flow. His arms will open. His hands will unclench. You'll say, just what am I supposed to do? His heart will be drawn to you. You see what's at the center of all of this? It's our hearts. And as wisdom calls in the young man to sit at her table, she offers him dinner conversation. She's offering him advice as he sits at table with her and says, now, go ahead and eat. And as you eat, let me talk to you. Let's talk about life. Where are you at in life? Do you realize that you need to commit? Do you realize that your life can be full? But where you end up in life is determined by your heart. So guard your heart with all vigilance, because out of it comes all the issues of life. Learn to hate the right things. Learn to love the right things. Because if you love the right things, you will be a righteous man. If you hate the right things, you will be a wicked man. And she offers this dinner conversation that is filled with deep and profound wisdom. But look here, as we've looked at the book of Proverbs, we're familiar with the simple, and we're familiar with the scoffer. There's one category in between. What's that? The naive is the simple. The fool. She doesn't even reference the category of the fool. What happens is, with the simple, there's hope. With the fool, he's making bad choices, but again, there's still hope. With the scoffer, he's making bad choices, and there's no hope. He's rejecting, rejecting, rejecting. She doesn't even offer this category of fool, as though it were a third option for him. Why is that? Because to make the choice is to become something. Do you realize that when you refuse wisdom, you are on the path to becoming something? When you accept wisdom, you're on the path to becoming something. something. And to make the choice is to become more or less of what God calls you to be. This is the dinner conversation that she's having with this young man. She continues. Her advice is that a right understanding of God, of who He is, enables a right response to what He says. Verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. It begins with fear, but it ends with love. My son, understand, as you eat this wealth, tasting the goodness of God, that who God is needs to impress you. It needs to be the greatest reality in your life. You need to be afraid of what you'll become without Him, and so you run to Him. You need to be afraid of what He's able to bring in your life if you refuse Him, and so you run to Him. But don't be afraid of Him unless you choose to reject Him. It starts with fear. This God is real. You need to be afraid if you're going to reject Him. You must be afraid of His curse because it is more terrible than anything you can imagine. It will chase you down more terribly than anything that you can imagine. You will not be able to escape. Take Him for real. But once you take Him for real, understand that He doesn't leave you in this place called fear. He brings you, He draws you with cords called love. He calls you my child, my own, my bride, my beloved. That's where this God brings you. A right understanding of who God is enables us to make a right response to what He says. In all of this speech over dinner, wisdom's focus is on the spiritual and on the eternal. A great dinner conversation, wouldn't you say? Come in and you can learn about life. So what are the consequences? The consequences of coming into wisdom's house is that, verse 11, by her, and we know that all of this is dinner conversation because she references herself now again in verse 11. For by me your days will be filled. They'll be multiplied. You will have fullness of days. That is, you'll have many of them. And by me years will be added to your life. You have fullness of days. You have fullness of life. You'll have many days. You'll have rich days. You'll experience the good life, the abundant life, if you come in and sit at my table and learn from me and listen to me and eat my meat and learn to love what's lovely. But in this world, Lady Wisdom isn't the only one who speaks. Madam Folly is right there as well, and we see her in verse 13. The woman Folly is loud, seductive, knows nothing. As we look at Madam Folly, we find that she's introduced negatively, not by activities, but by character qualities. She's shown by what she lacks. She lacks peace. She's loud. The idea is that she's boisterous of presence. She's clamorous. She makes her presence known. She's indiscreet. The other flip side of the coin there in being loud is she's restless and noisy of spirit. That's why her feet never stay at her house. We saw that back in chapter 5, where her feet are now at her house, now at the corner, now out on the streets. She can't keep herself still because she's always lurking, always looking, always lusting for one more prize. She's loud, lacking peace. It says that she's seductive here in the ESV. The idea is, the word is simple. It's the same word for that young man who lacks commitment. The idea, though, is open to options. That is, her values are open to options. Her convictions are open to options. Her standards are open to her options. Her conscience are open to options. She has no values, no standards, no conscience, no convictions. Some translate this without restraint, because the idea here is that she is one who lacks defined boundaries. In fact, her only commitment is to herself. Her only principle is pleasure. She's one who won't commit, who can't commit, because she's already committed to herself. Lack of knowledge. Literally, the word is here, she knows nothing. Chapter 5, verse 6, we saw that she doesn't ponder the path of life. Her ways wander. She doesn't even know it. She's unaware of it. But this isn't an innocent unknowing. This is a deliberate dumbness. In fact, verse 13, the woman folly, literally the Hebrew says, the woman of stupidity, the stupid woman, she's dumb by choice, willfully ignorant, choosing to not know. As we've watched Lady Wisdom draw in this young one to her house, sit him down at her table, and begin to talk with him and give him counsel. As this picture begins to set up for us, we see that woman folly, the stupid woman, is incapable of counsel. She doesn't know what she's talking about. She's incapable of counsel, and she's untrustworthy as a guide. She has no idea where she herself is going. How can she take you anywhere profitable? She doesn't know how to get there. Her activities are both subtle and prominent. She's at the door of her house. She's at the high places of the town. She's both lethargic and busy. When we see Lady Wisdom, she's building, she's hewing, she's preparing, she's making, she's setting. She's, if you look back, she's the one who's standing at the street corner. This woman is sitting like a spider in the middle of a web. Now, it's not that she hasn't done any activity. She's waiting for those who pass by so she can actively call out. But she's sitting there, dwelling in a place that she secured, she didn't build. She found a nice place in the middle of the yard, the middle of the town, and there she's setting up her camp. There she's laying her trap. There she's spinning her web so she can sit and wait for somebody to come. Again, as this picture's being set up, these pictures are meant to drive down deep to our hearts and understand, who is it that's calling me? Who is it that's waiting? Who is it that's lurking for me? She has a target. Lady Wisdom had a target because she was concerned. Lady Folly has a target, but she's not concerned because she's concerned only for herself. It's, again, the simple, the one who hasn't yet committed one way or another. He's a prime candidate for Lady Folly. Again, the senseless, the one who lacks fullness. I can fill him up with lots of experiences. But look at what else, how she positions herself, how she postures herself, who she pursues in this wait. She's looking for one who is clueless. Verse 15, calling to those who are passing by. Their purpose isn't to go to her house. It's the young man in chapter 7 who, he did go to her red light district. But he wasn't necessarily thinking he was going to end up there. She's looking for the one who would accidentally pass by her house, and she wants to make sure that it's no accident, but he comes in. She's lurking, she's waiting, they're clueless, and they're innocent. They're young innocents. Calling to those who pass by, to those who are going straight. Going straight on their way. She's looking. Isn't it amazing? The internet. You're not even looking for anything, and all of a sudden that thing comes up that you think, wow, you know, I didn't really realize I needed that. But now that it's there, I realize I need that. Or that thing that comes up and says, wow, I didn't really know I wanted that, but I want that. There is an activity of Satan that is targeting those who would pass by, those who would be innocent. You cannot walk through this life without being targeted by sin. And she's targeting. She's looking. She wants to bring down. She wants to use up. She wants to spit out anybody that she can. Her offer, oh, so very different from Lady Wisdom's. Her offer isn't just bread and not wine. Look at what she says there. Verse 16, whoever's simple, let him turn in here. To the one who lacks sense, she says, stolen water. Stolen water is sweet. Bread eaten in secret, it's so pleasant. Come on in. I've got water for you. Not just water, but stolen water. Not the special pleasures of the good life. Not that special concoction that grandma brings out at the special celebrations that helps to mark this day as set apart, holy, distinct. Not the special pleasures of the good life, the low pleasures, the base pleasures of the low life. Not just water. Let's get stolen water. Not just bread, but secret bread. Again, here, there's no preparation for lavish enjoyment of a banquet. There's simply the hasty consumption of a fare that's limited. Hey, I got this bread. We can share this bread. Let's eat it in secret. Let's hurry up and eat it before the others get back. Let's hurry up and consume it before somebody finds out. Let's hurry up and taste it before it's gone, before this opportunity vanishes. And rather than a banquet without cost, we find that this is a meal without satisfaction. Oh, there's real bread. There's real water. It really satisfies a little bit for a little while, but it's nothing like what Lady Wisdom offers. It's nothing like the fine fare of a meal that's been well prepared. It's like opening up the store-bought spaghetti versus something that's simmered on the stove for a full day. This is the total difference between tasting and seeing what is good and just tasting and seeing what tastes good. Her advice, sitting at table. She's talking. She says, come, let me explain to you how these stolen waters are sweet. There's something about stolen waters that taste good. Let me explain to you why. Because this immediate gratification is easy and enjoyable. And as she paints the picture, we are meant to connect her to the prostitute of chapter 5, to the loose woman of chapter 7. She's meant to picture that. What she's offering is everything that goes on in a brothel. What she's offering is the low life pleasures of easy enjoyment, of immediate gratification, of indulgence. Come on, it's so easy. It's so enjoyable. These stolen waters, in fact, the risk adds to the fun and the flavor of it. It's more enjoyable when you can get away with it. Stolen waters are so sweet. Horrible dinner counsel. Her advice continues, this bread, this secret bread, is pleasant. The idea is nobody's going to care. If nobody knows, let's keep it a secret. It's our little secret. Nobody will care if nobody knows. But she also continues to imply that private pleasures carry no consequences. We can get away with this. It doesn't hurt anybody. It's between consenting individuals. The risk is part of the fun. And she continues in her counsel to focus on what is sensual, on what is temporal. What is bodily gratifying rather than what is spiritually satisfying. What is temporally satisfying rather than what is eternally satisfying. Again, she stands as the exact opposite, the exact antithesis of Lady Wisdom. Consequences then? You walk in her door. Look at verse 18. He does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol, that is the grave. There's fullness in her house, but there's fullness of regret. When he walked through that door, he didn't realize there's bodies, there's body bags stacked over in the corner. All too soon, his eyes are going to be opened. It's like when Eve and Adam ate that first bite of the forbidden fruit. All of a sudden, boom, their eyes are opened. I know something I didn't know before, and I wish I didn't know it. I wish I didn't know it. That's why Proverbs, just a little bit later, talks about the bread of the prostitute turning to gravel in your mouth, son. Oh, you taste it. You chew it. But you realize that it's breaking your teeth. It's going down hard. It's tasteless. It's worthless. It's unsatisfying. And there's fullness of death. In fact, her house is simply a facade. It's a one-way door to the grave. One author calls those who live there the dead. He calls them the shadowy ghosts of living men. Oh, I've dined at Lady Folly's table before. Nothing wrong with me. I've dined at Lady Folly's table. I've walked into Lady Folly's house. I've dwelt there, had conversation there, enjoyed meals there. Nothing wrong with me. Not realizing that he himself is decaying, dying, fading from life itself. These are the two options. We missed one verse in all of this. That verse lies right in the very center of the entire psalm. It's verse 12. Because in this broken world, you must make your choice. We're not talking about a theoretical young man, a theoretical young woman. What we're getting at with the book of Proverbs is we're getting about you. You have a choice that needs to be made. You have a path that you will walk. You have a destination that you are going. The choice is yours, and verse 12 stands as the fulcrum, weighing out the only two options that exist. There's wisdom, folks, or there's folly. Wisdom that leads you to full life with God, folly that draws you away from enjoying that pleasures of God forever. Two options, wisdom or folly. Two options, love or hate. Loving God with all your heart or hating him, that is rejecting him. Life or death, heaven or hell, God's blessing, God's curse. The point of this passage at the end of the introduction and beginning of the individual Proverbs is that every decision you make is part of forging who you are becoming and where you are going. Think through an average day, the decisions that lie before you. Every decision has two options: seeking God and his counsel, or shooting from the hip, leaning on my own understanding. And every decision that I make is leading me down a path. It's forging me into the man that I'm becoming. And I alone am left to deal with the consequences. He says in verse 12, my son, if you are wise, you are wise to your own advantage. If you make the right choices, you know who benefits? You do. You do. But if you make the wrong choices and you reject Lady Wisdom, then if you scoff, if you reject, if you hate, if you turn, then understand you alone must bear that. The son has been listening to his dad talk. The dad is laying out the facts of life. He says, "Son, listen, there's one of two women that you will marry yourself to. There's one of two women that will have your heart. And one day you're going to wake up after the wedding and you're going to look into her face and you will be stuck with that as your bride for the rest of your life." For the rest of your life. She's yours. You chose her. You made your bed. You get to sleep in it. That's yours. Verse 12 stands as the fulcrum. Which are you going to choose? As you look at this passage and the pictures that he's been laying out for us, both women find themselves in the same city. You see, where you go in life isn't determined by this broken world in which you live. It's not determined by the city. Both men live in the same city. Both women are calling in the same city. It's broken. It's broken. By nature of the fall, it's broken. But by nature of the grace of our God, there's a voice that's calling us away from brokenness into redemption, into restoration, into fellowship with Him so that He can give us life in our brokenness. Where you go in life isn't determined by living in a broken world, but rather it's determined by the choices that you make. Those choices are the voices to which you listen. Those choices are the paths you choose to walk. Those choices are the houses that you choose to enter, the sites you choose to click. Those choices are the meals you choose to taste. Those choices are the counsel you choose to heed. The books, the blogs, the friends, the conversations, all of that is shaping who you are. And the whole point is every day you choose. And you choose 100 times a day. You choose 1,000 times a day. Is God a part of the choices that you make? Is this book a part of the choices that you make? Is this voice a part of the choices that you're making? If not, my friend, you have made a choice by not making this your choice. That's all he's saying. Oh, but I accepted Jesus as my Savior one day. I prayed a prayer. You know what the Bible says? The just are those who walk by this book, by faith in this book. If you're not doing life by this, if you're not doing life in light of Him, my friend, it doesn't matter how many prayers you've prayed or how many times you've accepted Jesus as your Savior. If you don't have a relationship with Him, you don't have a relationship with Him. This whole point is, how are you walking? Is it because of who God is? The fear of the Lord determining the steps that you take throughout the day? Every day we choose. You love what you love because you choose what you choose. We talked about this earlier in the book of Proverbs. We like to think of it in reverse. We choose what we choose because we love what we love. It's reverse. You learn to love things because you choose to love things. And as you make that choice repeatedly, 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 that love gets deeper and deeper and deeper in your heart. And what you learn to love determines who it is that you become. Because she becomes a part of you. And you become what she is. You're married. You become one. Apostle Paul says, "Don't you understand that when you take a prostitute, you become one with her in flesh?" There's very much sexual overtone to this book because you can't get away from the fact that man is made in the image of God. And God wants to be a part of you. It's a mystery. It really is. And that's why Paul says, I'm telling you, this is something more amazing than you can imagine. But God takes himself and puts himself inside of you and draws you into himself in this relationship called salvation, redemption. But as he lays this out, he says, understand the choices that you're making are making you. Let's pray.